I'm speaking with Jeff Taylor, who is the National Sales Manager for ESD Waste to Water Incorporated. And his topic at APWA 2007 was fleet washing and stormwater regulations. So Jeff has consented to give us an overview of the latest in the fleet wash-off technology as they relate to stormwater regulations and give us all an idea of the best techniques to follow in keeping our sweepers clean. So Jeff, thank you very much for taking the time out to speak with our World Sweeper listening audience, and I'll let you just take it from here.
Thank you, Ranger, and I think it's a good opportunity to help a segment in the industry that probably wants to get up to speed and know what's right, what's wrong, and what they should do in terms of washing their equipment. And I'll kind of narrow it down in terms of how this may apply to street sweepers. What I deal with and have for about the last 15 years is equipment washing, that is washing the equipment once they're done. So they go out and they sweep in the street and they do their thing, they're all out all over the place, and then they come back to their central maintenance facility or their central facility, and they dump the debris, and then they normally fuel up, and then the last thing that they do is they wash the equipment before they stage it, before they place it, you know, in its proper parking spot, and then end the day. So the part that I can help with is just that last part where they're washing their equipment. Does that sound like that's a good fit, Ranger?
Absolutely. One of the things that we absolutely emphasize in the industry is that you must pressure wash your sweeper out every day, because otherwise that material that is in the corners and crevices of the hopper will just rust the hopper out way too early in its lifespan. And there are other components equally as important, the hydraulic lines, the gutter broom areas, and so forth. So it's critical that equipment and machinery gets washed every day, every shift. So knowing how to do that according to today's crop of stormwater regulations is absolutely vital to the industry.
Okay, very good. Then that's what I'll go ahead and focus on. So we'll take it to the point where they're washing off the equipment, and typically this is done with a pressure washer. You know, maybe a 3,000 PSI pressure washer, sometimes a hot water pressure washer. The guys will usually spray on some soap as well when they're washing their equipment down. But the key is, and what we deal with is, gosh, what do you do with that water? And every operation will be maybe a little bit different in terms of how they're washing and where the water goes. But to give you an idea of what the laws are, the federal government 3 decades ago passed a couple of laws. One is called the Safe Drinking Water Act, and the other is the Clean Water Act. And what that does is it makes it illegal for any industrial wastewater to go to the storm drain, to go to septic tanks, to go to rivers, streams, ponds, leach fields, et cetera, et cetera. So what your guys want to do is they want to say, okay, once we wash this piece of equipment, where is this water going? and if it's going to a storm drain or a septic tank or anything like that, then it is illegal. Okay, and there's fines and all that kind of stuff associated with violators if they get caught. And if it, you know, I'm not going to scare your audience with it, but it's basically the laws have been on the books. Is there a lot of enforcement? Well, it's the enforcement is spotty. Some states enforce more stringently than others in terms of cracking down on guys washing and having the water go into, you know, lake streams, ponds, etc. That's why a lot of them may not know it, because they may not have had somebody, an EPA regulator or enforcement agency. Usually it's the states that enforce the EPA regulations.
Let me break in a moment, Jeff, if I can, to say that from my experience here, fielding calls from all over the United States and in some cases the world on this and other topics, what I'm seeing is that there is becoming much more enforcement on these topics, on the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act topics. And one of the factors is the possible fine. Usually there's not a huge fine for a first-time violator on the other, even especially if it's a city. On the other hand, usually there is press coverage when that occurs. And that can create such a negative, whether it's a contractor or it's a municipality, that they were skirting those issues these days when everything is and the environment is in the forefront, that that no one can afford any longer to take a chance on that topic.
And you're right. I think you're right. It's getting to that point where, you know, you really don't want to take a chance. And you, it's better to be proactive than to be reactive. Because once you're reactive, the fine has been imposed, it's hit the media, the bad press has happened and all that. And so I think you're exactly right.
That's without even covering the fact that it's the right thing to do.
Exactly. It's the morally correct thing to do. It is to keep the environment and the drinking water as clean as possible. But let's say that we're one of the guys that happens to be in violation, okay? And we want to do something about it. Well, what do we do? Well, there's really three viable options. There's two that are more practical. But the first, if you're washing your equipment, you can actually treat it and discharge the water under an NPDES permit. But typically, that's not very practical. So that would be option number one. Most people don't do that. The first thing that I would do is, if I had an operation, what I would do is I would check to see if I had access to the sanitary sewer, sometimes called the POTW. And I would see if I had sanitary sewer and what the discharge requirements were if I could hook in my wash bay to the sanitary sewer. So that would be the step number one. It's typically the least expensive, and it's typically the most accessible. So for most of your guys, that's what I would suggest, to see if you can go to the sanitary sewer. There are some downsides in doing that, because the sanitary sewer or POTW can change the discharge requirements and the treatment that you need to do, the pretreatment, before you go to the sanitary sewer. But that's the first option that I would pursue. The third option and the other one that would take a little bit of more skill level, and that's to recycle the wastewater coming from your wash operation. And
right.
there's facilities all over the country that are doing that, they wash down their sweeper and they recycle that wash water. And that's what I've been doing for the last 15 years, is helping people solve that problem in terms of wash water recycling. And the technology is available. I'd say 10 years ago, the technology was such that if you put in a wash water recycle system, it was high maintenance, it was expensive to maintain, it took a guy a long time to mess around with the equipment. That was back in the days where they had filtration systems and were adding chlorine and so forth. The technology has changed now to where there's equipment available that's easier to maintain, much easier to maintain, very simple to operate, and you don't need a PhD in biochemistry or chemistry, you know, to figure out how it works. It's quite simple. So the nice thing for your listeners and for those in the street sweeping industry is that, hey, there are options, there are viable solutions to be able to take care of the wash water issue.
My guess is that the cost of those kinds of systems has probably gone down a little too, with more demand and higher production.
I would say that's accurate. It's gone down a little bit, and it's become more efficient. Well, Ranger, in terms of, you know, pricing and so forth for a simple type application, let's say that we've got a street sweeping operation that has a wash area, they have access to the sanitary sewer. If the sanitary sewer is reasonable to deal with, what they might do is just simply put in an in-ground triple trap. Historically, most sanitary sewer districts have a pre-approved cement-type unit that you could put in the ground. This cement unit has a baffle in it. Water flows into it, drops out some solids, floats out some oils, and then goes on to the sanitary sewer. It may be that simple. Cost on that may be, $5,000 to $10,000 once it's installed and you have everything done. An improvement on that recently, in terms of, instead of having a cement triple trap that goes in, they make the units now out of metal material. They have welded fittings, and that will solve some of the problems that they've had with those triple traps. Sometimes you put in a triple trap, a cement one, and it does leak where the pipes go into it. or sometimes it does crack once it's installed. I've had that happen on a number of occasions with customers that I've worked with over the years. The newer ones do have the fittings. Some of them have dual wall, that is two walls in case one breaks. It's got another wall and also what's called interstitial monitoring. It's a big word, but it just means in between those two walls you can drop a stick down and see if there's any leaks, and so that you've got really good containment and you've got good treatment going on to the sanitary sewer. And same price range, probably install that for $7,000 to $10,000 once that's installed. But that would be, if you're going to the sanitary sewer, that would be a good, simple way to do it. Let's say that some sanitary sewers, they really don't want any new industrial wastewater. So really, the first thing to do is check with your sanitary sewer and see what they want and what they will accept in terms of the discharge limits. If they don't want the water, or if a facility does not have access to the sanitary sewer, then next best option would be to recycle the wash water. And a wash water recycle system oftentimes can be adapted to their existing facility if they've got some kind of little sump system. And you could put a system in like that that would return the water to a pressure washer, to let's say a hot or cold water pressure washer. You could install one of those for about $25,000. That'd be delivered and installed. The price range is reasonable to keep these guys, within the EPA limits and also to help them protect their property. What I found, I deal with a lot of equipment rental yards, and what I found is that one of the things they're very concerned about is protecting their property. Some of the locations have wash operations that will wash, and then the water just goes right into the ground, right on their property. And over the course of several years, that ground will become polluted, and if they ever want to sell the property, then it's a major cleanup, and it's usually, well over $100,000 to clean it up.
And let's be clear about that. It's not if they ever want to sell their property, it's when the property is sold.
Exactly. It is when they want to sell the property, and for some of them that have property, that property is an investment and part of their retirement. And I've seen that in many, many cases. And as I talk to customers, they say, Jeff, I really do want to protect this. And, what do I need to do? And so we help them set up a wash operation that protects their property, because that's the other driving factor. You've got the EPA regulations, and you want to keep those from a more ethical and you don't want to get fined standpoint. But you also want to protect your property. And so if there's a wash operation where the wash water is going directly onto the property, that's another red flag to me to go in and help the customer to solve that problem. And I would assume, you can correct me, Ranger, that there are several street sweeping operations that may be washing right on their own property and don't really know what the implications are.
Absolutely. And this would be a good wake-up call for those both municipalities and contractors. I think there are probably a few municipalities still in that category, but probably more private contractors. Many sweeping contractors have started from mom-and-pop businesses and suddenly have million-dollar businesses on their hands, yet they have, this is a piece of the puzzle that they haven't really taken hold of. And so I'm hoping this will be a wake-up call for them as a call for action.
Oh my gosh, yes. I can envision some of these private contractors that have been in business for a while, and I've run into property owners that, they may have bought the piece of property for $25,000 20 years ago, and all of a sudden everything is built up around them, and their piece of property is worth $1.5 million.
Right.
And they're sitting on this valuable piece of property, and of course they want to keep it clean, because when they go to sell it, they don't want to be selling a property that needs to be
a Superfund site. Well, and another aspect of this is a number of sweeping contractors, especially in some municipalities, are sifting their debris, which involves bringing the debris in, dumping it, then at some point having a transfer operation that takes it to an appropriate disposal facility and or putting it through a sifting operation to take out the the cigarette butts and paper and cups and litter, and then they're able to dispose of the majority of the material either as landfill cover or in some way that is inexpensive for them. It really can help cut costs. One of the problems that is occurring more and more, though, is that it's illegal to leave that material on the ground unless the runoff goes is handled correctly. Is there anything in this kind of system that can address that issue?
Well, you know, I was in California just a couple of months ago at a county operation that had just a whole bunch of street sweepers, and I saw where they were piling up the debris, and that was one of the issues that the maintenance manager was asking me about. He goes, you know, what can we do? It rains, it gets on the debris. And he goes, I know that water, you know, once it goes through that debris is
full of particulates.
Yes, full of particulates, and it's not supposed to be going where it's going right now. And I said, you know, that's right. And in that case, Ranger, that the thing that they really need to do, and this is a little bit out of, you know, my area of expertise, but it's a simple solution and fairly practical, is they really need to cover the place where the debris is so that rainwater doesn't get to it and create a runoff. That was a solution that I talked about with this one particular facility manager. Even if you have access to sanitary sewer, let's say, and that runoff goes and gets treated through a triple trap or whatever is necessary to meet the POTW requirements, the sanitary sewer does not want rainwater going to the sanitary sewer. So it all kind of boils down to, if you've got a debris pile that you're working with and transferring to wherever, you know, you're transferring it to get clean and sifted and off to disposal, you want to have that area covered. It, just like the wash water, it creates the same liability for your particular property or for EPA regulation violation. So that's the only solution that I can come up with that was practical, was just to cover it.
Mm-hmm. What else should the listeners know about in terms of wash-off, or have we covered the topic, do you think?
I think we covered it fairly well. The only other thing that I think would be useful for them is, if they decide they want to clean up the wash operation, is find somebody that's got some experience at designing the wash areas.
Mm-hmm.
And have them help. And a lot of them really won't charge for that service. A lot of them will provide that. If it's an equipment provider, they'll provide that service for free in terms of the design. Some of them will go to an engineer and may spend a lot of money with an engineer that may not necessarily know the best technologies available for treating and handling, you know, the equipment wash water. So that'd be my best advice, is, you know, go somebody that knows what they're doing in terms of wash water. Get them, if you can, for free to help you design your wash area, and to design one that's going to work for you for the long term. One of the things you really want to do, if you do have access to the sanitary sewer, is check out what their requirements are now and what they think the requirements are going to be in the future, kind of what the trend is.
And at the same time, project what your increase in volume may be in the next decade or two. And,
absolutely.
And cite your system for that.
That is absolutely correct. Some locations, they're going to say, you know, we're going to be here 2 more years and then we're buying a different location. Well, there's portable wash pad setups that take and capture and recycle the water that they could put in for, you know, 1 to 2 years until they want to get up and move to a new location.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of options for them, and that's why you want to talk with somebody that can give you good, solid advice and keep you free of the liabilities with the EPA and also with polluting your property.
And in a situation like that, this may seem obvious, but if you are planning to move to a new place, you want to build your wash system into the new property so you're not faced with some kind of retrofit later on at a higher price.
Absolutely. It's so much less expensive to do it on the front end oftentimes than trying to do a retrofit.
Well, thank you very much for that. We've been speaking with Jeff Taylor, who is National Sales Manager for ESD Waste to Water Incorporated. We certainly appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Ranger. It's been a pleasure, and look forward to working with people in the street sweeping industry.
You bet. It sounds like something that should be at the top of everyone's list if they don't have it already covered.
Absolutely.